Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Man, why you do that to yourself?
Oh, you don't really want to know that.
I do.
Well, if you must pry.
I must.
I don't know if you ever heard of me before, but I used to be called the Waco Kid.
The Waco Kid. He had the fastest hands in the West.
In the world.
Well, what happened?
Oh, well, it got so that every pissant prairie punk who thought he could shoot a gun would ride into town to try out the Waco Kid. I must have killed more men than Cecil B. DeMille. Got pretty gritty. I started to hear the word draw in my sleep. And one day, I was just walking down the street, and I heard a voice behind me say, "Reach for it, mister." And I spun around, and there I was, face to face, with a 6-year-old kid. Well, I just threw my guns down and walked away. Little bastard shot me in the ass. So I limped to the nearest saloon, crawled inside a whiskey bottle, and I've been there ever since.
Good afternoon to you. It is 19 minutes and 5 seconds after the hour of 1 in this, the month of August of the year of our Lord, 2010. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, an excursion into whimsy. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. We would like to be part of today's broadcast. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at rickemerson.com. Dawn at rickemerson.com. That is D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com. Or the live chat is open at the Rick Emerson website. Just go to rickemerson.com. I don't know. Just click on a thing and you go somewhere else and there's a place on the site where you type and Dawn answers back and then everybody has a good laugh and then we all go home. That's pretty much it. Wash, rinse, repeat. 503-505-6964. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up today, we have Celebrity Penis. I don't really know what that means. The nature of the celebrity, the nature of the penis, how the penis and the celebrity are interacting, if they are, in fact, one and the same. If it's just some sort of intersection of penis with celebrity that has resulted in said news story, it's all very confusing. All I know is it's written on the board to my immediate right, so it must be true. So Celebrity Penis Watch coming up today. We have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. This one by request. Listener Tom Sutton, I believe, who many of you know from the Facebook and so forth. So he asked the question, why is the center hole in a 45 RPM record larger than the center hole in a 33 or 78 RPM record? And I'm pleased to tell you we have the answer to that today. So by request, Pop Culture Authority today, why is the center hole in a 45 record larger the holes and other records. We'll get to that. Top five today, Don Taylor's top five creepiest love songs. Top five creepy love songs from Don. And I've averted my eyes, by the way. You handed me the list. You handed me the songs. I've done my very best not to try to figure out what any of them are, not to look, not to see, not to spy, not to give myself any sort of a tipped hand as to what they may be. So we'll get to those here just a bit as well. Also, our good friend Big Jim Willig is going to join us in the studio later on. He's known to many of you from being on the Marconi Show for a long time. Later on, his own show, KUFO. He's a comedian around town. In spite of that, he's a good person. So he will join us in the studios later on today, Mr. Big Jim Willig. Let's see what else. I hold it here in my hands. Well, it's not really. I'm not holding this. I'm holding an email about this. Well, first of all, you know, Cheryl sent us this. I don't even know if it's a video rodeo. I think it might just be a photo. I'm unclear about this. But she sent us this video rodeo submission. And she sent it to Dawn and I. And you and I never looked at it.
No.
Because the description was sufficient for us never to. The description was sufficient for us never to watch it.
But and then she emails back and goes, did you look at it? And we both just go, no.
Yeah. Because,
of course not.
I mean, I'll just tell you what it is, because this is probably not what we're going to watch today. Cheryl sent us a video rodeo where she actually gave us the description. Because, you know, video rodeo was this, you know, this contest we've done on the show for a long time where if you can watch some section of video or a particularly horrifying depiction of something without turning away, shutting your eyes, averting your eyes, whatever, you will win, you know, something bright and shiny. And more importantly, you'll win the respect and esteem of your friends and compatriots. But the deal is that we would never tell people what it was. We would just say, like, look, you're going to see something awful. You can't look away. And if you look away, you lose the contest. But you don't really ever, you know, but you don't give it all away. You don't give them too much of a heads up as to what to expect. It's got to be a shock. So first you see a girl, then you see two girls, then you see a cup, then it all goes wrong. Cheryl actually just sent us a thing where she said, hey, here's a woman who's using fly legs as false eyelashes. See, now it's in your head as well. Enjoy that for the rest of your Friday. And then she emails, she's like, have you watched it?
And no. Then why not? Well,
of course not. It's the same reason I don't watch. Hey, here's a guy ramming broken glass up his, you know, into his nether regions. Would you like to watch it? No. No, I would not, nor shall I. Anyway, so the point is sans intern, we have anybody to make watch the video rodeo, but it occurred to me today, Big Jim Willig joining us in the studio later on.
That's true.
And I got that whole thing where a guy's, Siegfried sent us, where it's a guy's head and then something to do with a bunch of larvae of some kind. See, there you go.
Yeah, that's good that we have someone else to
enjoy
do this
your,
and not me.
Enjoy your cottage cheese.
Thank you. By the way, if you're listening and you're hoping to communicate with us, Meebo is not responding to me. I've been trying to...
Has that been the case all day or is it just
no,
now?
No, it was fine earlier when we were on PDXFM, but I'm trying to log in now and I'm just getting this endlessly rotating sign that just says, signing on, please wait.
All right,
and
well,
nothing's happening. So I'm not ignoring you on purpose. If you're trying to talk to us,
or maybe she is, and this is a craftily conceived cover story that I, Rick Emerson, will have no part of. All right. Well, in any event, this has nothing to do with video rodeo. I've got something else here. Our good friend Siegfried sent me a submission for the worst song you've ever heard, and I don't know that it's quite up to Kevin Blechdom levels in one sense, but in another sense, it's way worse. In another sense, it's so far beyond Use Your Heart as a Telephone or Private Dancer or 2x2 or the greatest hits of Wing. It's because it is that rarest of creations. It is the retarded absurdity done with a straight face and done by someone who has a message that he wants to convey. It's a point he wants to get across. And he's using the medium of song to do so. And it's awful. It's awful. It's awful in the same way that Michael Lowen's song to Lindsay Lohan is awful. Although about a different subject and not nearly so well produced. And I can't believe I'm saying that. So we'll get to that today as well. It's another installment of It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard and so forth. Don Taylor's working on the following stories for you on this Friday.
The JetBlue flight attendant wants his job back. PCC lost a whole lot of students' Social Security numbers. And girls are hitting puberty earlier than ever.
Okay, so when you said this thing about PCC and that losing their Social Security numbers, that's not so much losing as it is inadvertently giving to somebody else?
Pretty much, yes. Not even inadvertently. Someone stole them.
All right.
So, but, you know.
Excellent.
Because of their own dumbness.
Fantastic. How was your evening last night, Dawn? Did you do anything exciting in the intervening 21 hours between the last time we spoke and now?
Well, last night was Thursday, so that was my husband's gaming night. So he was gone.
Does
so
he game at home, or does he game at a store or at someone's home?
He goes to someone's home. All right. And they go and they play some game where they pretend to be superheroes flying around fighting aliens or something. I don't know.
Is it now, is it a rotating location for the game night? Is it sometimes at your home?
No, no. It's usually at this one fellow's home. Because Patrick comes from Tualatin, and then there's another guy who comes from Vancouver. So they meet in this sort of centralized southeast Portland location.
Okay.
And they play. So he does that. So Thursdays are my night to basically sit at home and have some blessed silence. Because I'm either here with you or I'm at home with him. I'm almost never alone anymore.
So you're in the room with a talkative man most of your life.
Right. And so so basically, I mostly just sat and watched reruns of police procedurals on ION television.
Excellent.
They run all these episodes of, like, Criminal Minds and stuff back to back. But I have this neighbor. He lives right across the apartment complex driveway from me. We refer to him as Yelling Man. He has children. I don't know how many children he has, like, more than two. But they're always moving, so I've never bothered to really take a head count.
Fine.
And he seems to only be able to communicate with them through yelling. Like, every time he talks, I always hear him just, "Get back in the house! If you can't behave, I'm going to make you go to your room! Come on, get in the truck!"
I never wanted kids.
And that's always like it. And his kids, I've noticed, are responding by... one of them responds by basically turning into a smaller version of him. And the kid's voice sounded really kind of weirdly familiar. And my husband, Patrick, said that he thought it sounded like a screaming woman. But I was like, no, he's like a kid. He's like seven. And I finally figured it out last night when I was hearing them screech at each other. The kid sounds exactly like a character Amy Poehler used to do on Saturday Night Live, where she played this really annoying, hyperactive little girl who would run around after her stepfather, whose name was Rick, always yelling, "Rick! Rick! Look at me, Rick! Look over here, Rick! Look what I'm doing, Rick!" And this kid sounds exactly like that. And I was just sitting there, and of course it's warm, so I have the sliding glass door open, and I'm enjoying the lovely breeze coming in from the outdoors, and I'm hearing Yelling Man and his screechy kid. And they don't even sound angry. That's just how they talk to each other.
No, they're just idiots. And that's, everybody has had those neighbors, or sometimes like a roommate or a family member, where the only volume level they have, and I'm sometimes accused of speaking in a rapid voice and in an escalated volume, but I don't yell a lot. But we both know those people, and it's always is like some grubby, panted family that lives across the street from you. One of the kids is running around in a diaper. And the other kid is like a hoodlum shooting zip guns, you know, and the dad got laid off from his job at like a factory that makes bowling pins, and the mom is a whore, and, you know, and it's a whole lot of family just yells at each other all the time to get me another beer out of the garage, or alternatively, "I'm going to the video store. What do you want me to get?" "Who do you feel was the better character on Bewitched, Dick Sargent or Dick York?" And it's always just at some incredibly amplified volume level for reasons that are never really understood.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that Amy Poehler character, you know, just instinctively was probably based on someone she actually knew. So that little bit of life imitating art, imitating life is what that is. Well, I think I've told you, I got the next door neighbors where I went to sleep and then woke up to two different arguments, two different sets of people. It's like they're working in like a Morning Sam, Morning Ralph, Lady Hawk kind of a shift. Where as one unhappy couple goes to bed or finally just crashes from their meth binge, they tag another, you know, unhappy couple that wakes up, and then they begin, and I don't know what the deal is, why they always have to leave the apartment and come stand in the parking lot sort of near my home and then have the screaming fight there so the entire neighborhood gets to hear it. I don't understand what the motivate. There must be some unconscious thing in their psyche where they want everyone to hear the argument.
Well, they can't yell at each other. They can't yell at each other inside.
It wakes the baby.
They have to use their outside voice.
So it's just, it really is just the life of kings in my neighborhood. And I always do you ever do this? Do you ever live in a, and I do this every single night of my life, where you go outside and you have neighbors that are fighting, or maybe a neighbor who seems a little scurrilous, kind of a ne'er-do-well, and you are doing that thing that I suppose is a much bigger problem in actual, like, real sort of, like, gnarly cities and, like, real, like, bad metropolitan areas. But I do it in my neighborhood, where you walk out and there's a fight, or there's just some sort of ruckus going on, or maybe just a lot of cars that sort of appear, stay for 5 minutes. Then somebody comes out with a paper bag, hands it to somebody else, and then the car drives away. And it's never the same. You know, the cars just rotate all night.
Oh, yeah. I used to live in North Portland.
Yeah,
of course.
So you know what I'm talking about. And the thing where you are just absolutely trying to be the neighbor who is minding his own business, because it's no concern of yours what goes on there, because you don't want to be, you know, because if something goes wrong or the man comes by, you don't want to look like the neighbor that caught, that was the snitch. You don't want to look like the because snitches get stitches, Don. And so I do that thing of taking the dogs outside and just averting my eyes and never looking over when I hear like a yell, a scream, a gunshot, squealing tires, the sound of something exploding. I just look at the ground and I have this totally blank facial expression that I do. And so it is actually, I so do not enjoy walking down the streets of my neighborhood after dark that I have fully embraced, Lara's whole thing. We have a little, enclosure thing that we have. So that now I can just actually, let the dogs out, and I don't actually have to follow them out of the house at night. I can just send them out on their own into the world and then wait for them to come back. The other great thing about that is that I don't have to enter what my wife calls the spider forest, which is this. I've really come around on my opinion of spiders over the years, because I used to have a petrifying fear of them. I used to have an almost paralyzing fear of spiders. Really, where I could just, if there was a spider in a room, I was just a girl about it. I was just such a pussy. If there was a spider, I could just not enter the room. It would actually keep me out of sections of my own home. I would have to yield sections of a place where I lived and paid the rent to a small creature because I couldn't go in the room. So I had to eventually overcome that, and I've actually come all the way around to where I really sort of embrace the spiders in the front of our house, because then it's like a little sort of it's like an arachnid television program. It's a sort of eight-legged reality program that I can watch all the time. So when I duck out to check the mail, I can just look up to see exactly what's going on in Trials of Life, Rick Emerson Home Edition out front. But after dark is when they all come out. During the day, there's some of them out there. But a lot of them are day sleepers. But at night, if I have to walk the dogs at night and if I have to leave the house, there's that thing where every now and again I'd be walking along, and then you get that sort of something's in my, and you realize you've walked through a spider web. There's just the feeling that one is hitching a ride inside your ear or something. That is all leading up to just this very minor point, and then I have a question, and then we'll plunge on into the actual news for today.
Okay.
My minor point is this. I had forgotten all about this until I was just talking about the spider thing. But, I woke up this morning at around, maybe 5 or 5:30. And it was that thing where, you wake up to use the bathroom to get some water or whatever. And then you can't get back to sleep. But the thing that was keeping me from getting back to sleep this morning is the fact that I had some sort of a mosquito bite or something. Like on my inner right ankle. But here's the thing. It wasn't there when I went to bed. It was there when I woke up at around 4:30 in the morning. I had the mosquito bite going on. And so that means that something savagely attacked me between the hours of 2 when I went to bed and the hour of 4:30 when I woke up.
It was in your bed.
That's the thing is, so it wasn't no mosquito. That was a thing that actually had the foresight to throw a grappling hook and just crawl into the bed, root around under there, find part of my body that it found pleasing, sink its little fangs into me, consume part of my essence, and then skedaddle away, leaving just some sort of a spider bite type thing. And so at the end, something was actually crawling on me while I was asleep. That's the thing where spiders and I get off the train together. We're no longer on the same page. So just trying to think about that.
You were going to ask something.
No, here's the question I have as we head into the weekend. And I should have asked this days ago, because now we're going to go into a Friday and it's going to be Saturday and it's just going to be jackasses a mile deep. And it's going to be hot outside. That's it. It's going to be 100 degrees, so I'm not going to want to leave the house. But, I got this whole thing where my tags have expired on my car. And the man gives you a little bit of a, especially when you're a clean-cut fellow like myself, the man gives you a little bit of a grace period with that. They don't tag you for that right away. But, eventually, they're going to pull me over. And they're going to say, boyo, what's up with your tag? And I'm going to go, I don't know. And then they're going to give me a ticket. I already got a warning. I got off with a warning about 3 weeks ago because one of my taillights was burned out. And just, by the way, the only time in my life I have ever, ever gotten a warning. It is the first time a cop has ever given me a warning and not a ticket. So behold the joys of becoming old, that the cop now realizes you are not likely to pose a threat to anyone ever. So I got these, but the thing is, so I got the taillight I got to get fixed, and I have to get the taillight fixed, which I still haven't. I got to get the taillight fixed so I can take it to the goddamn emissions place, And I got to go to the emissions place so I can get the goddamn tabs renewed so I don't get a ticket.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do any of these things. And so my question is this. Can I have someone else do that for me, or do I need to take my own car to have all that done? Don Taylor in the back.
I think you can actually have somebody else do that for
really?
You. I mean, you can have somebody take your car in to get the taillight fixed.
The DEQ place will let somebody else bring a car
yeah.
in?
Yeah, they don't care if you're the actual owner. They're looking at the paperwork and looking at the car.
I had no idea. I always assumed that, like, all state regulated agencies, I don't know if they're actually part of the state or if they sort of have people, if they subcontract for that or whatever, but they're a regulated agency. I would assume that, like, all quasi-state agencies, they said ID, please, and they matched it against the registration of your car.
No, I think that it's just all about the
you can do the whole
the
thing
VIN
there.
Number and the paperwork and stuff for the car.
Because like, you can do the whole thing there where you get the emissions and then they give you your tabs right then. They go chink and they staple the thing. So I could just send some. I'm not thinking of anybody.
I mean, you could
call
them first to ask, but no, well, I don't.
Why
I don't,
do that when I'm right here in the room with
I
you?
I don't think because I mean, what if you were like an elderly person and your caregiver drives the car around? I mean, there's all kinds of reasons that you would have somebody else do it for you.
All right, hold on. I demand an answer. This right now. So somebody who knows or who can, I'll give you the phone number here. It is 503-505-6964.
Yeah, and you can't answer in the text box because I can't.
The Meebo is giving us
Meebo seems to be down.
Have you tried going to Meebo, the website, and not going to the version in our
I do it through the website.
Oh, really?
I always do it through the website.
Well, we'll
so
figure
I think Meebo itself is on the blank.
All right. Well, so we'll have to do it via the telephone. So maybe something that nobody knows. But if you know the answer to this, or if you, and I'm not, you don't have to work for the state or whatever. But if you know the answer, and if your name isn't Bruce Agler, you should. Because Bruce will call and it'll be on that creepy thing where it sounds like he's in my head, and then it just freaks me out because I feel like he's like voice number two inside my own. Then I feel like I'm Sybil or something. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. So my question is, I mean, I know I can take the car to Jiffy Lube or whatever, and they'll, like, fix the taillight. And don't call up and give me a ration of crap because I'm less than a man because I can't fix the lights on my own car. That is just an area in which my masculinity, my guy fu is weak.
I will say this. If I'm looking at the DEQ website, and it says, to complete your registration renewal at a DEQ testing station, you must provide your completed renewal reminder. Do not separate the pieces. Pass the admissions test and pay the testing fee and registration fee.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that it has to that you have to show
See,
any
just,
ID or that it has to be.
But I always
you.
Just figured that state web pages are, you know, unhelpful anyway. So I don't trust them. They're the government. Well, anyway, all right. So if you know the answer to that, because think of how much easier your life would be if you didn't have to. And I know it's not hard as such. It's just a pain in the ass, is what it is. It's the very definition of an American problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not equating it with like having to figure out how to build an adobe hut to get me through a monsoon. It is one of those things, like going to renew your driver's license. It's not hard, but you know what? If I told you, hey, Don, by the way, you have to renew your driver's license this week, you know what you do? You just say, God damn it, because it's a pain in the ass.
You know, here's the thing. I hate it when I can tell from, you know, listening to myself talk that I sometimes turn into that person who goes, I used to live in Los Angeles, so, and then fill in the blank. But the thing is, I've lived here for almost 20 years, and I don't ever complain or have any problem with anything I have to do with the DMV because I spent my formative early driving years in the Los Angeles area where they have
that will jade you
way too few DMV offices for way too many people. And you would end up having to take like half a day off from work if you had to go to the DMV and go and because it would take hours. It would take hours. And when I moved here, it was kind of like, oh my God,
oh no,
there are chairs.
No, we've
because
really
there are no chairs. It's like going to Ellis Island and standing there for like 3 hours.
They comb through your hair.
Waiting to talk to the most angry black woman you have ever met in your life who cares nothing for your pain. And it was just, it was hell. It was always hell. In the Southern California, you can do most of your DMV stuff at AAA.
Uh-huh.
They'll give you your tags and give you new plates and all this stuff. And that's Honest to God, that is the reason why 90% of the people in Southern California belong to AAA. Not for the towing. It's so you don't ever have to go to the DMV.
I will say no, and I should say the same thing, actually, because I lived in Utah, which is not nearly bad in a different way from L.A., of course, because L.A. is a special kind of hell. But Utah is just slow. That's the thing about Utah. Is that they're not even rude so much as they are just sluggish. And I have no complaints about the actual DMV here, like where you go to get your license or whatever. First of all, because you only have to do it every, like, 15 years or something. Like, I have lived here since 1998. I don't think my license expires for another 2 years. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's way better than most states. It's specifically the emissions thing because it's just the waiting in a long line of freaking cars and having to dig out paperwork. And again, it's way better than it used to be, too.
But if you don't work a 9-to-5 job. If you went, like, first thing in the morning open.
But I don't work a 9-to-5 job, but, I mean, I work a 10-to-4 job, and I work a 10-to-4 job, and they're not open every day, and they close at, like, 4:15. So that's the thing. And it's that thing where, like...
Yeah, you could get there at, like, 9 when they first open in the morning and just get it done.
You're ruining all my angst here. I'm not saying it's hard. This is... I'm not...
I know you're not saying it's hard. You're just saying you don't want to do it.
You are forfeiting your American card. To be an American is to complain about these things.
Some things that are more worthy of complaining about than others.
I should just send you to do it if it's so easy.
I'll do it. I'll go do it.
Really?
Yes, I will. I will go do it for you. Come back and report. I will do it for you.
Am I to pay you for this? Because I would.
Okay.
But if you weren't expected to be paid just now, that offer is rescinded.
You could pay me in Visa. You could provide me with Visa for a week or something.
All right, the verbal contract. Everybody heard that. Okay. All right. Ladies and gentlefolk, she's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The flight attendant whose dramatic departure from a JetBlue plane at a New York City airport has transformed him into a folk hero wants his job back, his lawyer told reporters Thursday. That's his life, Stephen Slater's legal aid defense attorney Howard Terman told reporters outside his client's home in Queens near the John F. Kennedy International Airport. His father was a pilot. His mother was a flight attendant. It's in his blood. That's what he likes to do. Whether Slater can regain his wings is unclear. An airline spokeswoman said, we're conducting an internal investigation regarding his status as an employee at JetBlue. And she added that Slater has been removed from duty pending the outcome of that internal inquiry. This, of course, is the flight attendant who was smacked in the head by a customer. What are they called?
Passenger.
That passenger.
Would you like some Viso now?
No, I've got a little.
All right.
Good. Okay. Hit in the head by a passenger's luggage who then sweared at him. And he finally...
Sweared?
Sweared.
Would you like some Viso now? He done sweared at him with the profanification. And then with the slidifying out of the plane. All right.
You're having problems with my enunciation.
Okay. By the way, we have this. It says, the way to hit DMV is 4:45 on a Friday. Everyone else has already gotten there and done it by 4:45. They can't stop you from coming in. And if you're also, if you're first in line in the morning, you're in and out in 10 minutes because you don't have 2 hours of other idiots' BS slowing down the process. Right. So there's that. Maybe I'm building it up in my head to be way harder than it is.
You really are.
It's one of those things that I just, it's like pulling out a splinter, though. I think about it. And it's like when you're running a particularly troublesome application on your computer and it slows down the whole CPU. When I think about it, it just makes me tired. It just slows down my whole brain even to ponder getting my car updated.
That said, though, I realize that I'm being really hypocritical telling you this because, you know, when you move, you're supposed to go in within 30 days.
Change address card. And you don't do it because it's a pain.
And change your driver's license at the DMV. And I've lived in my new apartment for a year and a half.
Yeah. Blame me when you're beaten down by the side of the road at some point for having improper identification. Dawn. All right. This is all true. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Think your 7-year-old is maturing faster than you did, Rick Emerson?
Yes. What?
She may actually be. This is interesting, though. You handed me this story, and I did this story already. Legion of News.
We had a sort of condensed version of the story a couple days ago. This is actually the same study. I think it was at the end of the show, and we were talking about it. But then we got cut off because we had to the curtain came down on the program. So,
we're revisiting this
because it's a long version. I think there's sound to go with this one, too.
Yes.
So.
A new study finds girls are reaching puberty as early as 7 years old. The study, which appears in the journal Pediatrics, found more than 10% of white 7-year-olds had reached puberty compared to just 5% in a similar study in the early 1990s. Experts aren't sure exactly why, but some say it's cause for concern.
Okay, it's bizarre that they're studying just white 7-year-olds. What is that about? That's odd. You would think that for science and whatnot, I mean, that's an odd way to specify the nature of your research. That's a strange way to scope exactly what it is you're studying. Is there some chemical being injected into the food of white folk that's not going everywhere else?
I don't know. It may just
now
be...
I'm trying to think of what that food would be.
May just be that this study of children specifically only had white children in the group.
Work with me here. If we just wanted to dose white people with something, we would put it in what food? Don Taylor in the back.
Margarine. I don't know. White people food.
I'm trying to think of something. I would say like Wonder Bread or whatever, but that's not true either. I have nothing. All right.
No.
Well, in any event, okay.
See, now I'm going to spend the whole rest of the day trying to think of white people food.
Okay.
Damn it.
I sweared you would have an answer to that.
You know, it's Ramadan.
Yes. No. I hate you.
Pediatrician Dr. Warren Siegel says this study is making him look at his own kids and patients differently.
That's a creepy thing to say. I wonder if he wishes he could rephrase that. This study about girls maturing at the age of 7 has me looking at my own children differently.
Well, anyway.
I think like every parent across the country today, my jaw dropped. Both as a parent and a pediatrician, I got very concerned.
I would estimate, by the way, that if you were to survey the vast number of parents in America, probably none of them know the story exists and wouldn't have read it if it had been in their local paper. So it might have just been his jaw, but what do I know? Here's Don Taylor.
Siegel says this study shows parents need to start talking to kids now about issues usually put off until at least middle school.
It's interesting that he won't actually just say the sex. It's about issues normally put off till middle school, like how if a guy gives you a quarter, you can sell an eighth.
We need to get on the bandwagon right now, is not wait until a high school to talk about health class and sexual education and tobacco use and alcohol and drugs and how to avoid all of those consequences.
The interesting thing is there that this is really just about girls getting their periods early or getting boobs early or something.
And somehow that ties inextricably to smoking cigarettes.
Because he is embarrassed to talk about sex, Ed, as it regards girls. That's why. Listen to the way he phrases it.
Because, when girls get their boobs, they immediately start smoking cigarettes.
Well, that's after the sex, Don. It's because he's afraid that his 7-year-old is going to be lighting up a Pall Mall once she's gotten it on, with an area man.
We need to get on the bandwagon right now. Is not wait until a high school to talk about health class and sexual education and tobacco use and alcohol and drugs and how to avoid all of those consequences.
Really, nothing accompanies afterglow like a Winston. And we need to start teaching them to drive, because when they get boobs, then they want to smoke cigarettes and borrow the car. We need to start driver's education in the third grade.
And what about Polident? All right. Hey, what is Polident?
I think it's something to put your dentures in to make your dentures whiter.
Okay, that's right. Soak okay, I'm glad you said that, because Polygrip is the thing to affix them to your gums.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Here's Don Taylor.
Siegel says girls are looking older earlier.
He sounds really creepy. I'm sorry. It must be said. He's looking at his own children differently and wanting them to smoke.
We also know that those girls are going to want to hang out with boys that are much older than them. And again, psychologically, cognitively, and socially, they're not ready to be in those situations.
What is wrong with Dr. Siegel? I think Dr. Siegel needs to be spoken to.
Because when an 8-year-old starts developing breast tissue earlier, she immediately wants to start hanging out with 15-year-olds.
I was going to say Warren Beatty, but 15-year-olds works too. Yeah. All right.
They just become slutty, smoking, car driving, rock and roll listening skanks as soon as they get hips and boobs.
I was wondering what noun we were going to end on there. We had the sort of thumbnail sketch of the story the other day, and It was all, and I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now because he's not even really saying that they're getting their menses earlier. That's a word I've latched onto, by the way, because it's in when I saw a sneak preview of the new James Westby film, Rid of Me, which has Katie O'Grady and Storm Large and other folk, and it was just quite good. But there is, and I wish I knew the actress who played her. There is a woman in that film who really just like steals every scene she is in, and she's a candy store employee who is sort of a tight ass. And she's always exhibiting, like, really disgusted disapproval of everything. And at one point, she's – I won't give it away, but there is a – there's a very – there's a moment that you will know when you – in fact, it's the scene that opens the film, and they then flash back to it later. But there is a scene involving a woman's cycle, and – but this other woman is remarking about the whole thing rather disgustedly, and she says – you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, your menses. And she, like, wrinkles her nose up and just, like, the cleanest look of hate. And it's just – and it's hilarious the way she delivers it. So I've been on the menses kick the last few days because it's a funny word. Courtney Hameister and I were talking about that after the screening. How just it's there's just something inherently funny about that. But so he's not even saying the girls are getting their periods earlier. It's, again, just the thing that they're getting boobs, which is weird.
Yeah. I mean, I think they are – starting menstruation earlier as well. But yeah, it went in the story that we read before and we were looking at it, it appeared that what they were really talking about was, you know, secondary sexual characteristics. They're talking about, right, you know, getting, you know.
Well, because the boobs are getting bigger in general. That's, I read some.
Are they?
I read, it's funny if you to see inside the male mind, you go to Dig on an after, dig.com on an afternoon around 3:30. And that site's usage base is very heavily male. You can just tell sometimes. But, you know, the thing about Dig is it's a news aggregator, so it's real news from, like, Scientific American or whatever. But you can tell what guys gravitate to because it, you know, gets put toward the top. And there was some study from, I don't know, it was, you know, I'm doing your thing. There was a study I read, but it was some article in, like, Scientific whatever.
Yeah, right. And like, you read a study.
But they were.
I'm just making stuff up now, Rick Emerson.
I looked at the pictures that accompanied this particular article. I read this article for the pictures. But it was just about how like the average size used to be like a C cup or something, and now the average size is a D or whatever. It used to be a B and now it's a C. And they said it wasn't just because of like increased weight in general. It was just something to do with hormones and blah, blah, blah. And also that we are just bigger, taller people and whatnot. So this seems like it's probably part and parcel of that. Plus,
I thought my husband seemed more cheerful lately.
It's true. So. And look, here's the thing that you can't – here's the thing. It's not considered PC to ask this. And I very, very rarely use the phrase politically correct because usually when someone uses the phrase PC or political correctness, first of all, it just means they're old and lame. And it means – and also when someone says, well, this might not be politically correct, it usually means that they're just a racist jackass and they're about to say something bigoted. That they want to sort of mask as them telling it like it is.
I know it's not PC to say this, but Mexicans steal stuff a lot, don't they?
That's exactly it. That's how when most people say they preface it with politically, it's just like they're just going to say something horrible, but they want to sort of position it as like they're telling the truth that America isn't ready to hear. But. Here is the definition of something. It is probably considered not PC to say, but I think maybe guys at least know what I'm talking about. In my estimation, now I could be wrong or I could have a sort of selective observation thing going on here, but I don't think so. It used to be that you didn't see a lot of Asian chicks with you know the who were large on top. It seems like you see a lot of those now. And I don't think it's just augmentation. I don't think that's just a science. I don't think that's like an under-the-knife cosmetic surgery thing going on. It seems like specifically with Asian chicks are sort of a bellwether for breast size. It seems like that is a thing that's enlarging over the last 10, 15 years. I'm just
Asian
saying.
Asian chicks are a bellwether for breast size.
Well,
I like that.
Because because if a woman goes from a D to a double D, perhaps, or whatever, guys don't know what that is. Guys, that's why in every porn thing it's like, you know, they say, you know, like in every Hustler they say, Candy is a 38 double D, because they know that guys don't know the difference. Like, the guys have no idea what a boob size is.
Yeah.
You know?
They don't even realize that the number is like meaningless.
Never use your rib cage, basically.
Yeah. Just 42. Yeah.
He's huge.
Yeah. That means nothing.
You know, so guys don't really know what that means. But it's like if you get, a smaller woman who then is good, you know, that's easier to spot. So I'm thinking it's easier to. So Asian chicks are the sort of canary in the breast coal mine. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But there's, so I think just that's a thing that's happening
in general. I personally haven't spent much time observing. Asian chicks' breasts, so I can't argue with this.
And it's not, and
but
it,
but I'll certainly take your word for it.
And I should be clear right now, not that there's anything wrong with this, but I am also not one of those guys who's like fixated on Asian chicks the way that many guys, especially on the Intertron, seem to be. Yeah. To like some freakish degree, you know, whatever. You know, I have no special interest one way or the other. I'm just saying, this study though said that over in America, in the United States, that women were becoming more well endowed through some non-surgical means. So, you know, what are you gonna do? Let's do one more here, and we'll take a break.
Let's get the celebrity penis watch done because all right. I don't want to build this up as more than it is, but I like the idea of a celebrity penis.
And I realize we're doing the thing where Jim's like been sitting in the kitchen for 12 minutes. So,
well, do you want to bring Jim in and then do the penis watch? Because, you know, why not have Jim here while we're talking about penises? Sure.
All right. Okay. Well, I suppose we could do that. Let's see here. What do we got coming up? We got the celebrity penis watch. We'll bring in Mr. Jim Willig, mm-hmm. Who is a very funny individual. He'll be joining us in the studio here in just a few. Let's see. Top five, Don Taylor's top five creepy love songs. God damn, we got a lot of things to get to. Pop Culture Authority. In fact, we'll do that here now. We will do Pop Culture Authority in like 60 seconds. We'll answer the magical question. Why are the center holes in 45 RPM records larger than the center holes in 33 or 78 RPM records? We'll answer that here in just a skosh. And then we have, hopefully we can get to it. We'll do another installment of It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard. So that is all on the way. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. You stay right there. Why do 45 RPM records have a larger center hole than 33s or 78s?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. It's a deeply ingrained part of the music lover's culture, hunting around for an adapter so you can put on a 45 single. Without the adapter, you're reliant on the weight of the phonograph needle to hold the record in place, of course, and that usually goes poorly. But why the adapter? That is, why the larger center hole at all? Well, money, of course. Specifically, that hallmark of the entertainment industry, the format war. When vinyl records first achieved mass popularity beginning around 1925, the standard speed was 78 rotations per minute. That was a matter of simple mechanics. The most widely used turntable motor just happened to result in a record turning at 78 RPMs, so that's what records were made to do. But as any Betamax or Laserdisc owner will tell you, things always get tricky. Columbia Records decided it wanted customers buying its records and its record player, not someone else's. The solution? Columbia created the 33 RPM record, which could only be used with 33 RPM record players, which, at the time, only Columbia made. RCA, not to be outdone, created the 45 RPM record, and the format war was on. It was all pointless, of course, since, as IBM would find out several decades later, reverse engineering and then cloning technology is fairly simple. Soon, the world was awash in 33s, 45s, and 78s. How would companies make money now? Well, in the case of RCA, they decided to saturate the emerging youth market with their recordings, using the most cutting-edge music sharing system then available, the jukebox. The jukebox, of course, had to lift those little 45 singles out of the rack, place them on a platter, and play them. All very difficult with the tiny little center hole in most 45s, so the hole was made larger. So, the next time you're at the head shop, or perhaps a Hot Topic, buying something decorated with the iconic image of a 45 adapter, which is called a spider, by the way, realize that were it not for the greedy, money-grubbing record industry, that product, like most things related to your music, wouldn't exist.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
We'll be right back. And good afternoon to you. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to engage with us telephonically today, 503-505-6964. Coming up later on this hour, we'll do today's top five, Don Taylor's top five creepiest love songs of all time. And I have averted my eyes from the list. I have suspicions. I have hunches. I have hypotheses.
I'm pretty sure you know what one of them will be.
Let me ask you this. Is one of these songs the song for which, I don't even know the grammar here, I'm like knee deep in syntax, that makes no sense. Did you give me the 45 single of one of these songs?
Yes, I did.
Awesome. You rule. All right, so I know what one of them is. So we got the top five coming up this hour, top five creepiest love songs. Also, we will endeavor to do another installment of It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard. We'll try to get to that. And this is all true. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, a man and a voice known to many Portland area radio listeners. Part of the Marconi Show for a long time, later on with his own show on KUFO. Now out storming the stages with his own brand of amusement and comedy. This is all turning very elliptical at the end. I have no end for this.
We have no exit strategy.
I'm just in this Cambodia of dialogue over here, and it's just, I don't know where
I'm going. Death March.
Mr. Jim Willig. Hello, sir. How are
you? Hello, how are you?
I am fantastic.
You are.
You got like a full-on like Bluto beard.
This is what I call my Amber Alert beard. This is something where you've given up at this point in time. So I mean, the good news is no one has asked me to babysit since I've grown it.
The best part is that your girlfriend is actually sitting in the back of the studio. She's going, I've given up. I don't even I don't even wear pants most days.
I just I wear a sleeping bag. I cut holes for feet. I might take a nap later. I don't know. Maybe not. Whatever.
We should just say out of the gate to sort of just turn right into the awkward skid. So you were presumably going to be here to pimp this that you were opening for Gilbert Gottfried.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it's so
good
great.
For you. It's a high point in your career.
Wow.
How excited you must be.
I got to tell you, to open for the parrot from Aladdin for me means so very, very much. Iago was my favorite character. But no, unfortunately, that has full on the plane has flown into the mountain. On that.
Has it been postponed? Because let me ask you this: was it that there were too many people trying to purchase tickets, and they in fact just the system could not bear the weight of all their inquiries?
They
and
have
it
to
crashed?
Move it to a larger venue.
That's probably it.
It has to go to a bigger theater because there's too many people who want to go see it.
Actually, no, it was canceled because Portland is not zoned for the awesomeness that is Gilbert Gottfried. If he would show up, it would be like the second coming of Jesus Christ, only this time Jewish.
I think it was Wasp or somebody that canceled. It's the only Wasp reference you're going to hear all day today, by the way. I think it was Wasp a couple years ago that they were supposed to be playing the someplace that was, I mean, it was like the Roseland or something, but, you know, not that big, but still apparently larger than they were capable of filling. And when they canceled the gig, I think Blackie Lawless actually said that it was because, I swear to God, this was his reason. He has this huge mic stand. It's like an H.R. Giger sort of a thing. And he actually claimed that his mic stand was so heavy that it was in violation of zoning regulations. And that they were afraid that the stage would actually collapse from the weight of his. This was the actual explanation in the press release.
At the Roseland, though, that is actually possible.
All I know is he was like, the weight of my mic stand is too much. It can't bear. I mean, you know.
Let's just do the show in the Shanghai tunnels. Let's do it right now.
Anyway, Gilbert everything canceled.
Unfortunately,
he was just here, wasn't he? Wasn't he just here like last month?
No, that's the thing is, when it was supposed to go down originally, but the lack of ticket sales, they pushed it back a month, and so I started this whole promotional tour to kind of get the word out, and unfortunately I guess I was the only one. KUFO was the one that was like, that was their baby, but I didn't hear any kind of like contests or anything like that for ticket giveaways.
Are you telling me that
I almost baited you, almost got you, darn it.
Are you telling me, I'm just going to make this just seems to be a factual representation of the situation.
Yeah.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, it is that despite their best promotional efforts, KUFO was, they were unable to meet the requirements of the venue and of their business partner, the Aladdin Theater.
That's a fair assessment.
There's nothing inaccurate about what I just said.
No. Some could also say they took a steaming poop on it, but aside from that, I would say, yeah, for the most part, it was pretty much something where I don't know if they just didn't sort of. Obviously, they're gearing up for Rockfest; that's their big thing. So I think maybe all the direction was pushed in that direction as opposed to The Gilbert Show. But either way, needless to say, it just kind of fell apart. And I now am cutting myself more. You know, I just write cutting Gilbert's name into
should
my
skin. Sell tickets
again.
To that.
Big Jim cuts himself. Come on down.
You know, maybe that's, you know, everybody's looking for different ways to monetize their product and ancillary revenue streams. So maybe that should be the thing is you could just, like some people sell advertising or they sell logo space. You could just offer to actually carve a sponsor's name into your arm.
GoldenPalace.com. Yes, and the blood looks like the face of baby Jesus right there.
So are you do you have a gig coming up somewhere? Are people going to be able to see your whimsicality in some other venue?
This was going to be my great comeback. This was going to be my Rocky IV.
Wow.
And sadly, no, Drago wins.
He has broken you.
you could do a Dave Chappelle, and you could just go to Pioneer Square and
I was thinking about going
with a portable bike,
yeah.
And then just wait.
Well, you know,
to wander by.
Have you?
Do you know who I used to be? I used to be a sidekick. Damn it!
Here's the thing. Let me ask you this: have you been here before? Have you been to our studio in the past?
Actually, I have not. No.
Okay, it's a pretty great place, and I tell people this, and they always think this sounds like one of those things where it's being done in an exaggerated way. But when I talk about we have a rooftop patio here, which we really do, inexplicably enough, and it's actually pretty awesome.
Do you play do you hit golf balls and such and do various other Weekend at Bernie's stuff?
I think that, Greg and Sarah have already speaking. It wasn't Weekend at Bernie's, but it was like a sitcom where Greg and Sarah actually got locked up on the roof a couple weeks ago because.
I smell a sitcom.
It was sort of like, and immediately it was like, do you remember that time we got locked up on the roof? But the door upstairs has, it's not even a key, but it's like one of those like combo, the passcode things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the passcode has been lost and the company is out of business. And so no one, and you actually have to have the passcode if you're a locksmith to even get the lock off the door. So it's just there for so if you go out you have to prop it open. So Greg and Sarah walked up to the patio, and it really is actually very nice. I think they're going to be doing a show up there maybe when they get back from vacation in a couple weeks. But they walked up there just to get some sun and just to, I don't whatever do the show prep or something.
And to drink
malt liquor by the gallon.
Oh, God.
And the door shuts behind them, and it's just sort of like click, and there's like, you know, sort of a like a swiveling of the head, sort of Ren Hawk style. Oh, no, you know. And then I just looked at my phone later. It was like, you have 700 missed calls. And it was they couldn't get down, and so they eventually – and they were trying to – no lie, trying to flag down passersby so that they could find someone reputable to throw their keys to.
Oh,
to have that person then come upstairs and let – and they finally –
excuse me, sir. Sir, no, not you. The other guy. No, the guy that with an actual job and prospects.
I think they had to then get someone who walked – I think somebody walked by, and they shouted at someone to call Greg's wife, who then had to come down, and then they threw the keys off the roof. The keys that I swear to Christ nearly stuck on the awning out front.
God.
And then at the last moment, Katie called them and she came up and she let them out. So we had that. But you could just go up there with some sort of a megaphone and just enforce your comedy, sort of a comedic date raping of the people who Portland as they walk by on the streets below.
Yeah, Portland has been asking for it for years, and I feel now it's just it's my duty to give it to them.
Yeah.
No, I could just imagine Greg and Sarah up there, sort of like, okay, so we want to do to pass the time. You remember that one time?
Yes.
Just like it turns into a clip show.
In any event, I can already tell the words. We have to exercise some form of self discipline.
Reel it in, like boarding a marlin.
By which I mean Dawn has to exercise discipline.
Hey,
because
otherwise, we're
going to get totally. Thank you. All right, we'll just do this.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Hey, let's do this penis watch.
All right. Here is your...
is it that time of year again?
Celebrity penis watch.
Oh.
I have no idea who the celebrity is. I just came in and celebrity penis was written on the board.
So you know it's going to be a good day.
The best part is how it's actually right above your girlfriend's head. It's just celebrity... it says celebrity penis job.
Hello. Well, a pseudo-celebrity.
This is, let's see, here's your penis watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your penis watch for Friday.
Zac Efron has revealed that a recent case of poison oak covered his entire body, including his private parts.
Intriguing.
The Charlie St. Cloud star confessed that the nasty condition had infected his penis during an interview with Details Magazine.
What is Charlie St. Cloud?
It's a movie.
Okay, so that's, but he's the High School Musical guy,
right? It's
some
kind of mopey chick flick movie. Yeah, he's the High School
Musical guy. All right, okay. Yeah.
According to the magazine's reporter, Andrew Goldman, the 22-year-old actor revealed the true extent of his condition when they both went to the toilet, and Efron then left his pants unzipped for a little while, saying, "I'm just airing it out.
Wait,
it
no,
itches
wait,
too
wait,
much.
No, wait, no, wait, no, wait. No, stop, stop.
Flag
stop.
On the play.
Wait, hold on. Who is it? Who? Let's all get to take a breath here. This is his co-star?
No,
he revealed it to?
No, this is the guy who was interviewing him for Details Magazine.
So he, okay. So he,
and they both went to the bathroom
okay.
at the same time.
All right. So this isn't a story he's telling to the guy from Details. This is where
no.
he and the guy from Details decide to go relieve themselves
right.
at the same moment. And the guy from Details says, what's up with your penis? Or whatever.
And he says,
because he just had it sitting out there.
Right. And he says, I'm airing it out.
It's what men do, apparently.
You can't tell me that you haven't been to a bar or a restaurant or an Olive Garden or something, and you're just standing there. You just let them hang. Just let them hang. Dangle.
I guess. Maybe I'm not as cosmopolitan as some.
It's the new rage. It's the bee's knees.
Not as continental in my behavior.
Efron, who appears on the cover of the magazine, Details Magazine, claimed he got a bad case of poison oak while hiking in a California park.
Naked.
He said he became infected after jumping from a 30-foot cliff into a pool of water, hitting a poison oak bush on the way down.
I instinctively disbelieve several facets of this story.
It's called BS.
Goldman, who alleges that Efron took off his shirt also to show him some of the rash that had spread across his back, wrote, "Half of his back has been taken over by a crust resembling swollen cornflakes."
I have a question. Yes. The senator from Pennsylvania. Okay, so he's in the bathroom, boys are dangling, and he just busts the shirt out. "Oh, dude, it's totally fine. Check this out." So he's basically naked.
He's undressed in front of the guy from Details. If you had, let me just ask you this, Don.
Yeah.
Maybe things are different when you're a lady, but if you're, and I'm not saying this is ever, ever, ever the case, but in the event that your body was covered with, quote, a crust that looked like cornflakes, and that's so horrifying, I can't even believe that my lips agreed to form those words. Wouldn't you just leave it at, like, a description or, like, a, you ought to see this, it's all bad? I mean, why would you? There's some things that are better.
It's like a map of Germany.
You know, I was actually with a couple of male friends at the Bridgeport Brew Pub once, and I went to use the restroom, and I was standing at the sink washing my hands, and there was this other woman in the bathroom, and she was wearing shorts, and she turns to me, and she lifts her foot up and puts it on the sink and, like, pulls her shorts way up so I can see, like, her crotch and her underpants and everything, and she points at the inside of her thigh and says, "Does this look like some sort of a rash to you?"
Oh my God.
I thought that was a thing that only happened in like punchlines of jokes.
And I was like, I wouldn't know. Not a doctor. Not. And I went back to the table and I said, "Okay, weird thing just happened." And I told my friends this, my two male friends, and they both looked at me and immediately just went, "That would never happen in the men's room."
No, because guys, you just don't. I mean, and it, even if it's just on your back, like. Like, you don't have to get showing off some crust-like formation on your body to somebody else. No, thank you. Thank you, no.
Girls will chat. Girls will kibitz while they're in the ladies' room. But guys treat the men's room like church. You go in. You don't speak. You don't make eye contact with anybody else. You sit. You stand. You kneel. You get out.
That's the thing.
And one of my friends actually said to me, he goes, "Do you think she was coming on to you?" I'm like, really?
By showing you a rash.
Does this look like a rash?
So how did you two meet? How did you two meet? Funny story.
And I don't know anything about it. So, like, is it poison oak, you said?
Poison oak.
Well, first of all,
yeah.
If you're jumping off a cliff and you're doing it wrong, if you're jumping off a cliff and hitting things on the way down, you've misunderstood what it means to jump off a cliff. Also, if you jump off a cliff and something is whacking you right in the store as you're plunging down to the water, that's going to be the larger problem.
Yeah.
It's not what is the chemical nature of the thing hitting you in the crotch as you're plummeting down to the earth. It's the actual hitting.
Yeah.
Also, is that contagious? Is that like if you have poison oak and like you rub your hand on somebody else, is that a thing? Is it catch?
I think so. I think both poison oak and poison ivy, if there's liquid coming off it, it's weeping,
or
so
corn
to speak.
Or cornflake type crust.
Well, anyway, he also added when he was speaking to this writer, "Dude, it's like everywhere. Everywhere. I can't even begin to show you because you'll get so grossed out.
But let me take off my pants.
I look like a zombie from Dawn of the Dead. Zac Efron,
yeah.
Everyone.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to go ahead and say, because there's no mention of bruising or like scratches. Because seriously, like you said, if you jump off a cliff and you crack your boys on a bush on the way down.
That's the larger problem.
Yeah.
I mean.
There's poison. And honestly, that would be like a grazing. You would just be catching it slightly.
Yeah.
Unless you landed in a patch of it.
I mean, it seems implausible unless there was a large branch of some kind sticking out. I mean, I don't really know the nature of poison.
This is the part of the story you're focusing on, is the plausibility of whether or not, of how he actually got it.
Well,
not the taking his pants off to show
sores. One goes to the other. One goes to the other because if you believe that the underpinnings of this story are false, in other words, if he is not being totally upfront and forward about how the nature of this rash and how he got it, then maybe he's trying to do a little misdirection. Maybe he's doing a little hiding in plain sight. Here's what this
is
like.
So really, he has syphilis all over his body.
I am not saying that.
And he's pretending to get something else.
Rick Emerson is not saying Zac Efron has syphilis all over his body or anywhere. That is Don Taylor who said that. That is, in our litigious society, that is not a thing Rick Emerson said.
Killed Capone.
Even implied. That's not what I'm saying. This reminds me, there was a story that came out about a year and a half ago. Where it was, Mick Jagger, Jerry Hall, is that his ex-wife?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think she was claiming, I think it was Jerry Hall, although it might have been that 18-year-old mail order bride that he had from like Spain or whatever. You know, that chick that it's like they got married, you know, she was like, he waited until she turned 18 and then spirited her away and they got married at some like bone through the nose ceremony that wasn't legitimate. They found out later it wasn't real or whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is that it was revealed by, I believe, one of Mick Jagger's exes, and I think it was this like Miss Argentina or whoever she was, that he believed it was a virility treatment he put like a bamboo enclosure around his member, around his penis, and he put a bamboo enclosure, like a sheath of some kind, around his member, and then it was through the sides, sort of like that magician's trick where you put the lady in the basket and then pierce it with swords, through the sides, a medicine man from some... You know, from some tribe or whatever, would pierce it. Would like stick in the side. Would stick cactus needles in the side.
Because this is for virility.
That's what he claimed. And so the deal was that it would cause a natural elongation and and general revitalizing of the male member and its abilities. And so I swear to God, this was the story that Mick Jagger had told his female friend. He's like, yes. And so I go to this place where they put a sheath on it and then they stick me with cactus needles, and that. That just, to me, sounded for all the world like a guy who was trying to come up with some insanely implausible, yet paradoxically, therefore, believable story to explain the fact that his penis was covered with holes and swollen up. And that's the thing with his Zac Efron and his back and a crust-like formation, which you would never show to anyone.
No.
That's, despite what screenwriter William Goldman would have you believe, some things are better off told and not shown.
Yeah, you would be wrapped up like Claude Rains. You would not just be dropping trow in front of,
I think it's also quite possible, and I'm going out on a limb here, that Zac Efron is not very smart.
Okay, well, that's sheer speculation at this point in time, but I would probably vote yes on that proposition.
He might have just been ripped out of his mind on something too. So I mean, who's to say? Are there photos? I mean, I can't even believe I'm asking this.
No, there were not. Well, photos.
Perez Hilton, get on that.
If you were the guy from Details, why would you not then immediately say, "Can I photograph that?"
You pull out your iPhone, click.
That's what I would. I would absolutely do.
Email
that.
It to everyone.
Dude, I gotta put this on my Facebook. Hold on.
All right. Well, let's end. This is your. That was your penis watch for Friday.
Take
for
a look at sweet my Christ. Enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Well,
that's rockapella, right?
Sickened. What?
That's rockapella, right?
It's Da Vinci's Notebook.
Oh.
Da Vinci's Notebook, who...
angering Catholics everywhere.
Who also did... God, what is it?
Of whom are now Paul and Storm.
Paul and Storm, who are the guys who open for Jonathan Colton every time he comes to Portland. So never mind. It's a long story. I was going to tell one of my boring, pointless anecdotes.
They came into the studio once, and he didn't realize that they were the guys who... who did this song.
I passed up a chance to have them sing it because we had Colton in the studio and they sing his harmonies with him and on tour.
Yeah.
And I didn't answer the phones. I was busy doing the interview. And afterward, every single call was like, dude, the enormous penis guys, you're in your studio, which is not normally, you know, normally it means something else. But I had those guys in the studio and I missed the chance to have them, you know, just have them sing the Take a Look at My Enormous Penis song. And I've been filled with shame ever since. We're here with Mr. Big Jim Willig. You can find out more about him, by the way, at facebook.com/Jim Willig, JimWillig, and so forth. This is Dawn Taylor at the News Desk.
Portland Community College officials said they sent out alerts after a flash drive containing the names and social security numbers of nearly 3,000 individuals was stolen from an employee's car.
Wait, did you say it was on a flash drive or it was like a series of flash drives?
It says it was on a flash drive.
Okay.
The personal information of 2,900 Multnomah County participants in the Oregon Food Stamp Employment Transition Program was stored on the device. The program, which assists unemployed workers, was supported by the Oregon Department of Human Services and served by PCC. Whitkit Chung, PCC's Vice President for Administrative Services.
You just had a bunch of consonants there. No, you didn't actually speak.
Sounds like a Klingon command.
And I did mispronounce that. It's actually Wingkit Chung.
Okay.
Wingkit Chung.
Great band, by the way. Early stuff is fantastic.
Said the school sent letters to all of the participants. So far, there's no indication at this point that any of the personal information in question has been accessed by anyone outside of the college. The college hopes it's dodged a bullet, and students hope so, too. If thief does find out and decides to take advantage of it, then that spells a lot of trouble for everybody on campus, said a student.
The Wingkit Chung is what you go to when your bat-leth has not done the appropriate job of vanquishing your enemy.
You call this sharpened?
You know, this is the second story, though, we've had, like, in a week of something local where thousands of people's social security numbers and names were on some portable flash drive that some lower-level employee was just carrying around with them.
Yeah.
Why is that?
You know,
why would that be?
Well, this is this is the reason why I have a different MP3 player anyway, but this is the reason why I would never buy, you know, like those iPod Nanos and the whatever. I lose stuff that's large all the time. And so it's not like I lose large stuff less frequently, but if you lose something large, the odds are by definition exponentially greater that you will then be able to find it again. And it's not going to slip into subatomic space, when it falls out of your hand.
Well, it's like the George Carlin bit, like, you know, is it, where did it go? I don't know. When will he be back? Soon. And anything over 6 feet never comes back on its own.
No, that, or it's like as you said, the flash drive that contains 900 terabytes of information, which, you know, anything that you can just sort of slip into your watch pocket, it seems like, you know, they ought to just, some stuff ought to be made large just so it can't accidentally go home, in a guy's pocket.
It also just seems from an administrative standpoint that putting something like that on any portable device ought to be against somebody's policy.
Yeah.
I mean, why? Why were 3,000 social security numbers on a flash drive in the first place?
Without having something attached to it, like a hubcap, like a bathroom key at a Sherry's or something.
Much less in an employee's car.
That's a really good question, actually, is what was it sort of doing just on the guy's keychain or whatever? Just sort of going along with him, as he went to do what with it? I had actually really never thought about that. I was all on the whole business of shrinking technology, but it didn't occur to me that that's probably not a thing. It's not like you just need that, just to sort of be carried around with you on a daily basis for no readily apparent reason.
Skate key, Fred Meyer's reward card, the codes to Skynet.
Jesus. All right. Okay. Well, that's what happens with the various governmental agencies and hospitals. It's like some guy will take a laptop home that has like lab results, you know, for 50,000 patients or something. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
General Motors posted its second straight profitable quarter Thursday, helping clear the way for a sale of shares to the public that's needed to repay billions in taxpayer assistance it received last year. In addition, the automaker said its chief executive is resigning, a move that will give the company its fourth CEO in less than 18 months. Jeremy Anwell with Edmunds.com said Daniel Ackerson, a former CEO of Nextel and a GM board member for just over a year, will succeed Ed Whitaker, a move he says is all about the IPO.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is this GM audio here?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the yesterday audio you were talking about? All right.
No, is it? I thought this was
today.
Yeah, it is.
GM.
I'm sorry.
Got it. All right. So this is GM cut number one.
Yes.
All right. Blah 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 blah. That guy.
I think they're going to put this guy out front and center very quickly because that's the, you know, once you've dealt with the succession planning question, then the next question is about continuity and you know, who is this guy? And they're going to be, I think, very aggressive in getting him out there.
I don't even understand how this works because didn't the government buy a large section of GM? Isn't that a thing where the government owned GM or they became, because everybody made the government Motors joke and whatever, and how is it like the government invested in them when they were getting ready to go belly up? Is that no longer, because then, so if then they're selling shares to the, if they're selling shares to the public, then it even makes sense because then it's like, well, because then where is the money going if you are buying stock in GM? Is it going to the government or is it going to the company?
Well, I think the money that ostensibly the bulk of the money they're getting from selling shares is going to go to repay the government for the loans that they got.
All right. So this is a bit.
Really just going into rich guys' pockets so they can go to Aruba their supermodel girlfriend.
Just so they can go on vacation with Thad Allen. This is one of those things that no one was ever. And now it looks like it's sort of in our rearview mirrors, at least with GM. Nobody was ever able to adequately explain this to me at the time, the whole business of how the GM government intersection worked. Because it wasn't like it stopped being a private or a publicly traded company. It remained a publicly traded company, even though the government owned a large stake of it. I don't even know if it might have been even a majority. And so then my question was, if you were still a shareholder of GM, was that a thing where you got paid by the government? Or did they somehow suspend all of that? It's the thing. It's not even like it really affects me. It's like I have stock in GM or something. I just never understand how any of this stuff works. It's just one of those stories that brings my financial ignorance into stark relief.
I just always imagine it has to do with like fat white guys smoking cigars with hookers in their lap and giant sacks full of money.
It's just that guy. It's that guy from Monopoly. It's H.G. Pennypacker, sort of with a wheelbarrow full of someone else's dollars that he's taking.
Sacks with dollar signs on the side.
Exactly.
What I'm amazed by is, you know, like when they pick a new pope. You're Pope for life. So, I mean, there is no like, you're not doing that good a job there, Benedict.
We're gonna broom you on out.
Yeah. So, I mean, why don't they do that? I mean, like, regardless of making bad mistakes or not, you got to stick with the guy. So, I mean, I think ideally GM should just pick a guy and keep with him until death.
Or maybe it should be one of those things where it's like a musical chairs where all of the companies have to switch GMs one place, you know, like the general managers or whatever, the president, they all have to rotate one.
Like so a Mad Hatter Tea Party?
Exactly, you know? So it's like, so Pope Benedict, he goes to run AT&T. The guy
Hello, from, this is a Pope Benedict.
The guy from AT&T goes to run Vivid Video. Really, how much worse could anything get? How much damage could any one of those guys do relative to what's already been done?
The following phone sex may be recorded for training purposes.
And then once they screw up at their job, they'll just get handed a few million dollars and moved into the next job.
Exactly.
Which is how they do it anyway.
Exactly. All right. Let's do one more here, and then we will let's do one more. Then we will we'll talk a bit more to Big Jim before we roll today's worst song ever, then et cetera, et cetera. Then we'll do the top five and stay reasonably on track. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
British border control officials caught an Italian man trying to smuggle $17,000 out of Northern Ireland in his underpants. The man was stopped by border control officials on July 23rd as he boarded a flight to Rome from Belfast International Airport. The cash, which consisted of British pounds sterling and euro notes, was discovered in the man's underwear, pockets, and wallet. The UK border agency said that the man was not able to provide a reasonable explanation for why he was carrying such a large amount of cash. The money was detained under the Proceeds of Crime Act and will only be returned if he could provide proof to a court that the money came from a legitimate source.
The best part about that is the way that that article is phrased postulates it operates from the assumption that there is some sort of a reasonable explanation. He just couldn't remember what it was. Like that somewhere out there in the ether is a plausible reason why you would have $17,000 in your underwear. He just wasn't able to conjure it up from the dark spaces of his memory.
Where did I get this money? That is a great question.
And it's always the pants. It's like you would think, like smuggling technology has not evolved at all. Didn't we have a guy last week who was like 75 capuchin monkeys or something,
yeah.
And they were all jammed into his underwear.
There's always some guy with like. You know, 50 lizards in his pants or something.
For the purposes of gambling.
And that's the thing. It's in the pants or it's in the ass. And that's it. Those are the only two. Yeah, those are the only, you know, and it is
just
like,
find a guy with a hollow leg, you know, or I don't know, just like, yeah, get the old broken arm trick.
It seems
something.
Like, yeah, there's got to be some sort of next step forward, some evolution in smuggling technology, because it's just, this is like the bank robbing thing we were talking about last hour, where it's like, at this point, it's. Barring some sort of new innovation, that is a zero-sum game. You're never going to get anywhere with that.
Bring back the turban. I always like that one. Yeah. Where like you just like you know, wrap it up around your head. There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah. Or the classic pregnant lady wearing a muumuu.
Exactly.
Hello.
It's always good. It's good to go back to the classics, really.
I'm exhausted. all of this comedy is wearing me out. We're here with Mr. Big Jim Willig, and so just not to dwell on whatever, but there was. As I sometimes say about myself, there was a time when I was at KUFO, and then later on, there was a time when I was no longer at KUFO at all in any way. And so, now you were there in sort of in stages. Did you start out on the Marconi show? Was that sort of where you began there?
Yeah, actually,
I don't think I was at the building at that time.
His original producer was Christine Levine, who I had known through doing stand up comedy. And she had sent an email out to all the comics saying, look, I've never produced a full-time show before. This is very daunting. If you have any ideas, please send them my way. So what I did was every night to help her out, I'd send her an email with like maybe 10 ideas in there. Some of them were crap. Some of them were really good. And every night I just would try and send her more and more and more stuff so that she would have something to sort of present at the table, not trying to position myself in any way, just trying to help her out. And eventually Marconi was like, well, this guy seems like he's kind of like into this. Why don't we bring him on and give him like something to do once a week? So they gave me a sports report to do once a week. So I came up with Poor Sports. I'd do that every Monday after like all the major sporting events were over with. And then that sort of moved into having me on twice a week. Then it had moved me to every day of the week, working pretty much free of charge because they're just sort of like feeling me out to see if I'd be a good fit for the show.
Will he work long hours for low pay? Let's bring him in and see.
Let's not dangle that carrot just yet.
Does he like demeaning, soul-crushing jobs that come with a bonus of instability? Peril to your career at all moments.
How many ulcers do you see yourself having in 5 years? Just ballpark it.
Do you enjoy working for four bosses in 18 months?
Really?
We really? Well, it's like we had the GM management structure there for a while.
Straight.
It was like every day there was like some fat bastard in New York who would just spin a wheel and he would say, and today here's your program director and here's your general manager. This will all change again next Wednesday.
Yeah, it was a lottery that they would just basically pull names out of a hat and like, who's this guy? I'm your boss for the week.
And so you were there, and then Marconi, who is back there now, but Marconi got laid off at one point, and then you stuck around, and then you were still there, and then you were doing the evening show.
Yeah, they pulled me into the office, and they said that they were letting Marconi go, and I'm like, okay.
How did they phrase it? Let me ask this: did they open it with we're making a change? Is that because that's exactly how those things were phrased? I will say that every boss has their own way of telling people that either they are fired or that someone else has been fired or is about to be fired. And there was a like the rings in a tree. You can gauge, you know, where you were and when you were at a radio station by how those things were phrased. At that time, the opening phrase was, we're making a change and an adjustment. And so here's what's going to be happening. And so how did they broach it to you?
They just said that he would be no longer a part of the KUFO family.
Please tell me they said family. Thank
you.
Yeah,
they said family.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah,
well
but,
done.
But later on, when they got rid of me, they gave me a phrase that I had never heard of in my entire life. Because it's obviously a corporate radio, or was a corporate radio station, so they can't just say you're fired because you may come back with an axe and a bottle of tequila and set fire to someone's Daewoo. So what they did with me was they bring me in and they're like, okay, Jim.
Oh, it's like, you are a loathsome individual.
you're getting a little too proud of yourself. We need to bring you down a peg or two. No, they brought me in, and it was one of those things where he's like, Jim, can I see you in my office? I'm like, no problem, boss man. What you need? I come bopping in there. Like, I haven't seen him. Like, all right. He's like, okay, so we did a head count recently. I'm just like, okay, head count's good. You want to know who's here, who's not, you know, that sort of thing. He's like, and we're going to do a headcount reduction.
Are you kidding me?
Kid you. I couldn't make that. I could not make that up.
A headcount reduction.
Then he gave me this look like, you know what I'm talking about, right? I'm like, I
I'm not following you.
Yeah. I need to see a shrink. You want me to get a haircut? What does a headcount reduction specifically mean? Well, we're going to let you go. And I'm just like, oh.
See, that sucks when it's like you don't even really know what they're getting
yeah.
at. And it's like, and you have to ask, you know, you have to ask to clarify your own termination.
Yeah.
Like, I got fired from a 7-Eleven one time, and the guy, which, I can't
Me
keep...
thinks there's a story here.
The story is that this is the only skill that I have. I have been fired, I mean, I guess you could make the case that I've been fired from almost every radio job I've ever had, but I have been fired from every non-radio job I have ever held, literally. Every single non-radio job I have ever had, they have fired me, which I guess is all for the good. But I got fired at a 7-Eleven one time because, you know, because, like, sometimes, you know, the guy will come in and he'll look at the receipts and then he'll look at the money in the till, and it's like there's not enough money. You know, too little money in the till. You know, yeah. you're missing money. With me, my math is just like so bad that it was actually the opposite. I swear to Christ, where there was always more money in the till than there should have been. You know, based on the receipts, where it's like, you know, I'd sold $500 worth of stuff, $600 worth of stuff in the till.
I see. I would see that as a bull. You should get a promotion for that.
And he would come in and he'd be like, all right, so you're way over on the till based on these receipts. And, like, the second time it happened, he said, he goes, okay, so we're gonna remove you from the payroll or something like that. But it was something, some vague statement. And I was like, you know, I was like maybe 20, 21, 22. And I don't think I'd ever heard that phrase before. And I didn't quite know what it meant. I somehow in my head convinced myself it was something good.
Yeah.
He's like, well, we're gonna transition you from the payroll. And I went, oh, that's great. Okay, so I'll see you tonight.
Transition me.
And he actually, and I turned to leave, and he actually goes, no, you're fired, jackass, get back here. And he had to bring me back, and because I was headed for the door to go home and sleep and come back bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for another shift. So they told you we're going to make a headcount reduction.
Yeah, which to me sounded like they're going to fire me via duck, duck, goose. Like, okay, Jim, would you come in here and have a seat on the floor with seven of your other coworkers? Okay, we're going to play a little corporate game. So I'm going to walk by, put my hand on your head and say duck.
And so was that before or after you had done that day's show?
It was before. It was before that day's show. So, and the thing is, yeah, I totally did not see it coming. I was like all excited to be there for the day. And, you know, I'm working on stuff. And he's just like, yeah. And so I'll be completely honest. Slowly it dawned on me as we were talking. He's saying, okay, we're going to set you up with the HR guy. We're going to get you, you know, your pension or your pension, whatever. Your severance package.
Your many, many benefits.
Your shekels and rubles.
Yeah.
But at one point, I actually started to break down, and I started to tear up. And that's really what a boss wants, because when you get fired, it's almost like you're breaking up with your job.
Right.
You know, it's just like, it's not you, it's us, okay? We're not the same anymore. We've changed.
Yeah, see, and the worst and best part about that, Here's the thing that sucks about that is when you are being fired, which I have done as well. I will copy that. When I'm being fired, you know, I've been fired where you're just sitting there and you're just going, well, that's great. I appreciate you being upfront with me about it. I'm old man. It's okay.
I am, man.
But the worst part about that is that, and this happened to me when I was working at Spokane, which is like, you know, I mean, getting fired at Spokane sucks because it's like then you have no job and you're in Spokane.
Yeah.
And no money to leave. Now I no longer have the financial means to get out of this goddamn town. So being fired in Spokane, I was just in the office going, all right, thanks so much. I appreciate you hiring me in the first place. And what sucks the most is that later on you were just picturing that fat bastard later on in the afternoon going, yeah, and then fired Emerson. Yeah, he started to cry. I had to comfort him. It's a tough job. It's a difficult row to hoe. Well, let's go drink, you know? And just picturing people who would still have goddamn jobs talking about how great they are for sitting there and, you know, and taking the fact that you were crying, you know, while they fired you. And they're doing all this right before getting back to work in their offices, which they still have because they're still employed. Sons of bitches.
Yeah, pretty much. it was funny because it was the first weekend where the person I was with at the time, she went out of town, so I got to drive her car around, which was perfect because now I could actually just get all the stuff from my desk and get out of there as fast as I possibly could. But, yeah, it was something where it was such a complete utter blindside that I was just like, I could not believe that it happened. And what's ironic was I've been working with Bridget, our webmistress at
right.
the time. Awesome, awesome person. She and I, we had just gotten my page on the website up the day before. It wasn't even 24 hours up, and it was like gone.
That's
and
awesome.
Within the span of me talking with our boss, And me getting out of there, the website gone. No, like my
oh
my
no,
face,
that's no,
every, it, yeah, that's instantaneous.
Well, Lisa Wood has talked about that. You know, and I can say she, this is not a secret. She put up a blog about this at KUFO when she was let go. And I should say this isn't. Like, this isn't the fault of, like, engineers or IT. They're just doing what they're told. They got a gig,
yeah.
And that's they're told what to do. But there's the deal where, like, you walk into the office, and they go, oh, if anyone should ask, tell them you're fired. You know, and then, by the time you turn around, get out the door, it's like all your stuff is turned off. Your card is deactivated. Who was it that – it was Tim Savage at KUFO. Somebody sent a miscommunication. And I don't know if – Don, does this sort of thing happen at newspapers? Do they fire you in such like a dick fashion and I'm not trying to single out KUFO. This is just like radio in general.
He's got two thumbs and is fired. That guy.
Well, I've only had two full-time newspaper jobs, and I was fired from both of them.
Excellent. Well done.
It's called consistency.
You know, I was laid off from the first one.
Uh-huh.
Second one, just flat out fired. But yeah, pretty much the same thing. It's like everybody looks uncomfortable. And you get the sense of like, oh, something bad's happening. But the people who know aren't allowed to tell you yet.
Yeah.
And they've promised that they won't tell. But you can tell just from the look in their eyes.
So are we
going to
have,
gonna
have lunch tomorrow? Yeah, sure.
And your boss says, after lunch, could you come in and see me? And you're just going,
so you never got back to me on that time off request. Just kind of wonder what the status is on
and
that.
And then you go in and you sit down and... with the layoff, it was nicer because they actually didn't want to let me go. They liked me, but it was one of those, well, we've been told that we have to do a 25% reduction of employees across the board, and there are four people in editorial. You're it.
Damn.
Is basically it.
It's like the lottery. Like, okay, you just got to pull the black rock out of the bag, but they're all black.
So you have that thing where you're going, apparently, I'm the most expendable.
I think it was Tim Savage, where there was some sort of – when they fired Tim Savage a couple years ago, and it is actually – my brain is just such – the radio is just such a – it's turned my head into cheesecloth. I don't remember when anything happened, what year anything was. So I don't remember who it was that fired him. Some PD fired him. But there was a screw-up with the paperwork, and they actually turned all his stuff off too early, like two days beforehand. And it was like he came to work and he's like, here I am, Tim Savage, trying to do it. And the door doesn't want to seem to open. Hello, it. Court, Bobby. My key doesn't. Can you let me in? That'll be okay. Great, thanks. And then he went up and he asked, in engineering, he's like, hey, IT guy, my card doesn't work. Why is that? And you know, and of course, then there's the long, awkward silence of, I don't know. I'll look into that, I guess. And so then it was like the next day or the day after that that they said, by the way, could you join us in the office? And he said that he had already sort of put it together. And I think he had the – Tim was such a great guy. I think he actually watched it. He goes, yeah, I'm fired. I already took my stuff home yesterday, so thanks. Where do I sign the thing? Because he'd already like put it together. You know, the funny thing about this is that because normally the HR guy at an office is like the angel of death.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, it's like that cat in England that can smell when old people are about to die. and it's in the nursing home, and it's like you come in and it's like Shecky the gray cat is on your bed, like you know you say goodbye to grandma now because she won't be here later. But you'd walk in and like our HR guy, I'll just say his first name. His name was Mike. You would see him. You'd walk into a room. Hey, boss, you wanted to see me? Oh, hell no. Because it's like, there's Mike. And you know that it sucks for him because he's the nicest guy, but
he's in charge
of firing you. And it's like, and especially during that whole, I mean, judging from the news the last couple of days, not like the recession has even hit rock bottom yet, but I mean, it's that time when we were all sort of becoming aware of it because it was in the news every day. And he was having to fire people every day. And you would walk into an office and there he was. And you went, God damn, why are you here for me now? They fired him.
Oh, man.
And my question is, who's in the office when they fire that guy?
Yeah, at that point, it's pretty much like you walk in and it's an empty room and there's just like a little note hanging from like a ceiling fan that just says you're fired.
Not to break up all of this frivolity, but
Jesus.
First of all, have we read our sponsor?
Oh, no.
Bang
no, let's
today?
Do that.
We should do that.
Well, let me just do the I'll tell you what. Let me do the billboard here and then we'll do one more amusing anecdote. Then I'll read the full thing. So this program and all the whimsy contained therein is brought to you by many fine folks, including but not limited to The Cleaning Solution. Operated by one man named Mr. Michael Beatty. 971-533-3211 is his number. 971 533-3211. Make a note of that number. We will talk more about them here in just a skosher. So, well, in any event. So, anyway, so all that happened, and so now we're here, and you are bringing your comedy to the masses, Big Jim. So.
I do my best. I got a couple of gigs, hopefully that will pan out here in the near future, and put that up on my Facebook as soon as possible. But aside from that, I have my day job working at a porn store.
Awesome.
On Burnside. Which, I mean,
even better.
Yeah.
Is it, I shouldn't say which one, but no, is it,
it's fantasy for adults only.
Is it the one right downtown, in the middle of downtown?
No, it's actually, right across the overpass from the Crystal Ballroom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I guess that's what I'm thinking of. So,
yeah.
I was actually talking to Sarah about this yesterday, that radio people, there seems to be some sort of radio person porn store.
It's
like
a
Venn
lateral
diagram
move.
That
yeah.
Everybody I know in radio has either worked or will work at some point at a porn store. It is a portal through which all pass.
Absolutely.
That particular store, that actually ties into an anecdote I started to tell you off the air like yesterday. And you said, save it for the air. I was in that store. I was with my husband.
We were a platinum member.
We were in the neighborhood, and we popped in because I knew that there was a certain lubricant that they sell there that mm-hmm. I enjoy. Rick loves stories
water-based,
like
silicone-based.
And that's the thing. It's behind the counter, so you got to ask the guy. And so I had to point it. And the same thing. Do you want the oil-based or the silicone-based? I was like, I want the silicone-based. And the guy looked at me, and he pulled it out. He looked at me, and he said, good choice. And I was unsure how to respond to that. Like,
thank you, question mark?
Yeah, thank you, clerk, for approving my lube choice. I'm still unsure.
Like the opposite of that. I'd just be like, oh, the silicone. All right, well, I guess.
I guess that's good because, well, you would ask me.
Was I supposed
this
to feel proud? Like, yes, I'm a connoisseur of. Lubricant.
Because you would ask me, you know, how I felt like if I was at the supermarket and if I was buying something and a guy approved of like the celery I was purchasing or something. But it's that Dawn, that thing that Dawn does all the time where she asks me about something innocuous, but then in like 0.5 seconds it becomes about her breasts somehow or like somebody effing somebody else. She's, you know, because I was like, well, I was at Safeway buying like a head of lettuce. And she goes, hey, so did you ever have that thing where you're buying lube and the guy says, you know, for frictionless action, this is really your only choice or something. And do you guys have some of the stuff they have the thing where it's like, there actually is like a little station where like, it's like a little perfume sampling station at a Woolworths, but it's a thing where you just like,
the testers?
It's like a bunch of testing lube things where you just squirt it onto your hand.
That seems unhygienic.
You see a bunch of people standing around, not in the normal circle way, but just like sitting like around this little like station, just sort of applying lubricant to their hands.
Really?
And rubbing them together and going, oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things.
94 was a lot better.
I'm
vintage is horrible.
Notes of pepper in this somehow.
An oaky finish. I like that. No, actually, we do have a series of flavored lubes, and we have taste testers. And people were just like, you know, I'm trying to find like a flavored lube. I don't know which one to get. I'm just like, well, we have this brand here. And I kid you not, the brand name is J.O., and we bring out this little, like, I have it on a plate. I bring out the plate, and there's like a, there's a little.
Do you have little pink spoons, like at 31 flavors?
We have colored popsicle sticks. And we put that down there, and regardless, people will take it, and they'll just put a little on the side. That one's nice. I like that one. And I always tell people, I'm just like, yeah, I love this stuff because if I forget my lunch, I just like grab one, just like, throw it over ice with a little vodka, make a little like, you know, luberita.
You put a few jimmies on there, and it's just, all right. Well,
it's still disturbing.
In case you were wondering who brought you this talk of lubricant and stores filled with porn. That's the cleaning solution. In the person of Michael Beatty, a proud listener, sponsor, advertiser, he can be reached. In fact, just write down this number. It's 971-533-3211. Because, friends, the thing about that silicone-based lubricant is it stains.
It does. It does.
That doesn't just wash right out of your clothing.
Wash that lube right out of my hair.
What is it? Is it water-based? There's something else-based.
Oil-based.
Is that come out, too? What is it? There's one.
Silicone does stain. That's the one point that I always make, that water-based is good, but the water in it will eventually absorb into your skin. but so you have to reapply. It becomes kind of tacky. Silicone will stay slick for as long as you want it to, but it'll stain anything porous like hardwoods or fabric, stuff like that.
So perhaps if you've got a hardwood floor, maybe carpet, upholstery, stone, marble tile, if your shoes walk on it, he can clean it, or if it becomes despoiled or defiled in any other way. if you are perhaps worried about the appearance of your living room or some other section of your home, if you're just abhorrent in manners of personal maintenance, you might want to write down this this phone number, because someone will see your shame eventually, and then you will have to take your own life in a manner that is appropriately
like Bob
punitive.
Crane.
Yeah, so don't do that. Write down this number. It's 971-533-3211. Maybe your place is clean now. At some point, probably as you're getting ready to have some sort of a shindig, you're going to see like a massive spot on the floor, and then you're just going to be doing that thing of like moving furniture around, trying to cover it or whatever. Just don't do that. Just write down the number. It's 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty runs The Cleaning Solution, locally owned and operated. He buys all of his stuff, all of his equipment, chemical supplies, all that from Portland businesses, and keeps his advertising dollars here as well. Residential and commercial cleaning. Keep your place looking as good as the day you bought it. 971-533-3211. That is Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution. All right, so we got the top five to do, and I do have this worst song you've ever heard.
Now, do we have time to do the top five? I mean, we are, we got Greg and Sarah coming in, and we are running short.
Are Greg
time.
And Sarah here now, do you suppose?
I don't know. Do you want me to go look?
Jim, why don't you open that door and see if Greg and Sarah seem to be lurking in the kitchen, and then we'll do one of the two. We'll either do the top five, or we'll do, I might actually put off the worst song you've ever heard, depending. Ah, see, there you go. Right. See, I say that we have carte blanche then. Okay. I say this show is a tabula rasa on which we will write whatever it is we wish. All right, so I got to thank our good friend Siegfried for sending me this. Let me make sure I've got the right cut here.
Siegfried.
Our friend Siegfried, who many of you remember, he comes on, he talks about the Grindhouse Film Festival, which I think we actually just missed another Grindhouse Spectacular, which happened on Wednesday of this week. So he sent this to me, and he is a connoisseur of all things bad. He will run across things, things that no man should see, and somehow there's just a pipeline directly to his home, and he sees them and he passes them along to us. This is a song by a guy named It's a strange name. The guy's name is Trade Martin. I don't know what kind of first name Trade is, but his name is Trade Martin, and it appears to be a real song, because his suspicion was he said I don't know if this song is legitimate or if it's on the level or whatever. I looked the guy up, and the guy has actually several extant songs that predate this one. He has several recordings. So this is a real song. This is not meant to be wacky.
I feel bad for Malia, because she's not going to be able to hear this.
Well, it's if only there were some way, perhaps.
If only there were other headphones that could be...
I was actually going to say...
I almost brought my own cans today. I was that close.
I was going to make the observation, if only there was some mechanism by which the average person who was not in the room equipped with headphones could then hear the show later on.
Oh, where is that?
Or maybe hear the show every day for less than they might expect to pay for such a brilliant supply of comedy.
Perhaps, how much would that cost?
It would, amazingly enough,
like
I am told.
A series of tubes, are you telling?
It's exactly like a series of tubes, Jim. They're tubes of fun.
Fun tubes.
They're cylinders of – they're pink, fleshy cylinders of fun shaped like Rick.
Oh, my God. You paint a word painting, my friend, like a few others.
But they are, and they're available for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, I'm told.
Wow.
And that comedy is delivered to you via an amazing invention that can funnel this comedy directly into your portable music player or right into your headphones, should you be sitting near a computer, or in fact onto a mobile device of some kind.
You mean everything we've done here today, this entire show? These people are getting this for only 32 cents.
You get it for
a
quarter, a nickel, and 2 pennies. I mean,
wow.
Really, come on.
That's
now.
Less than feeding a child of another country.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
It's a lot less than lube.
You know.
Yes, it is.
Point, set, match.
So this, let's forget that whole thing I said about being pink and fleshy and cylindrical.
Yeah,
it was just awkward.
Oh, God, you brought it back.
So Siegfried says this to me, and so this is actually a song that is not done for the purposes of comedy. It is the best kind of comedy, the inadvertent kind. And this was sent to us last night. This song is called, I don't want to give the game away, but the song is called simply, "We've Got to Stop the Mosque at Ground Zero," by Trade Martin. And there's an accompanying video, by the way. I would play the video, but it's just, imagine just like really bad like animated clip art of eagles and flags, and then like firemen staring bravely into a horizon that you can't quite see. You know, something very powerful just left of the camera.
For America.
So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, we've got the...
We've got freedom of religion, I understand. But ground zero is one location where a mosque shouldn't stand.
Yeah.
You can't stop the mosque at ground zero.
Oh, yeah.
Thumbing its nose at every victim and hero. Thousands of Americans died in the assassination.
Burlington, the war memorial.
Can't let them build it. No. There's a painful memory in our minds. Our hearts keep breaking when we envision that tragic time.
Everybody.
We gotta stop the mosque at ground zero.
We gotta stop
the snows at every big.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands of Americans died in the attack. It's a sacred place, and that's a cold hard fact.
Oh, I mean, history of Islam.
Yeah.
Oh.
We gotta stop it. Can't let them build.
I love this country.
God help us retain the honor and trust. In God we trust. For all the families that have suffered so damn much.
So yeah.
Damn much.
We
gotta stop it. We gotta stop the mosque at ground zero.
Oh, yeah.
This is where they would cut to a series of celebrity singers in the video.
Dan Aykroyd. And
that's a cold, hard fact.
Are you kidding me? 3,000 people died a block and a half away? Are you serious?
Many innocent Americans were killed. If we let them build it, can't you see? They'll turn 9/11 to a mockery. We gotta stop the mosque at ground zero.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Making fools of us. Thousands of Americans died.
Shouting random stuff.
Slap in the face, and there's no doubt about
it.
And then it just fades out there dramatically. So there you go. The best part is, I wonder how I'm just picturing this guy in a studio working out the three-part harmonies for thousands of Americans died. And that's got to be a...
Let's try that again, Mike. Yeah. One more time.
Can you sweeten track number two a little bit, please? Thank you.
See, when you get to the chorus, God. All I can see is Bruce Springsteen and Courtney Cox dancing on stage just like that. Yeah, all right.
Oh, good Lord. So there you go. So
down zero.
Yeah, that's... thank our good friend Siegfried for that. All right, let's roll the top five.
Five, four, three, two, one, fire.
I'm going to play that every day.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right, ladies and gentlefolk, without further ado, Don Taylor prepared this top five for you today. These are Don Taylor's top five. Now, are these the top five creepiest love songs just overall, or that have had use in your own life to some degree, or?
Basically, it's just the top five, like, creepiest love songs just off the top of my head, ones that I think to myself, What songs just really creep me out when I hear them?
Excellent.
And this would be them.
Okay. So these are Don Taylor's top five creepiest love songs right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. In fact, let me make sure that I've got the list. Okay.
Okay.
Did you hand it to me?
It's on the back.
Is it right
over
here?
Everything.
Oh, it's not this thing. Oh, this is yesterday. Okay.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Honorable mention, John Mayer, Your Body is a Wonderland. Part of it is his voice is just kind of creepy.
You know what he kind of sounds like a little bit?
One thing
He kind of sounds like the let's see where is it? He kind of sounds like the
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really planets. I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates.
There we go. He sounds a little bit like William Borucky there. No, he does have a little bit of a, I'm looking in your window late at night with a bone saw in my hand.
And the song is about laying around naked in bed with his girlfriend, which, you know, that's in and of itself is not so creepy. But later we will get to the chorus in which he says, your body's a wonderland, 1 mile to every inch of your skin like porcelain, 1 pair of candy lips and your bubblegum tongue. And it's just creepy.
Bubblegum tongue sounds like some sort of a skin disease that you would have. And just that your body is a wonderland is weird. Because then I think about that Michael Jackson Leave Me Alone video where he's laying on the ground and his body's covered with tracks.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Do not want.
No. And if you want love.
I think if your body is being more like a strip mall, Don. Just FYI.
Your body is a strip mall.
My body's a donut shop.
Sam. All right, these are... He's doing that thing where he's not even singing. He's just breathing things.
Yeah, this is a song about a breathy, naked guy who's just sort of touching you and looking at you and then going, I like your tongue.
Can I have some of your hair for a doll that I'm making at home?
Oh, my God.
Want to wear your skin as clothing.
What a terrible song. All right, F this guy. I hope he dies.
And these are fire.
Don Taylor's top 5 creepiest love songs.
Number 5, Leslie Gore, That's the Way Boys Are.
As though Leslie Gore would understand how boys are. So what is the boy doing in this song that she's indulging?
He's ogling other ladies. He's basically staring at other women.
That's just how bros are, though.
And she's dying a little bit inside, but she doesn't say anything because that's the way boys are.
So the subtitle is "And I Know My Place."
Yes. That's the way.
That's the way doormats are.
I don't see anything wrong with this song, Don.
No.
I find this song to be a thoroughly appropriate approach to male-female interaction.
So my parents were.
It worked for generations before us. Don, why do you have to muck with the program?
It's really just a reflection of that entire, you know, John Gray, Men Are From Mars, Women From Venus thing, where, you know, men need to go into their
emotional cave. Yeah.
And as a woman, it's our job to just let them be there and have it, and they'll come out back out eventually. Forget your needs, ladies. Just let him be. That's the way boys are.
Women have needs?
Not the good ones.
Oh, whoa.
The good ones have no needs.
That's what I'm saying.
And if we do have needs, we keep them to our own damn selves.
I was going to say, you hardly know they're even there.
Somebody finally said it.
Here's Dawn Taylor with your top 5 creepy love songs.
Number 4, Carly Simon, You Belong to Me.
Was there some rule that everything from the 70s had to sound like Kodachrome? Everything has that weird, that slip sliding away little thing going on in the background. Why'd you tell me this? I don't think I know this song. Were you looking for my reaction? What do you need to know? Don't you know I'll always be your girl? You don't have to prove to me you're beautiful.
and here we go.
So this is a stalking song.
This is a jealous girlfriend song. This is a song of like, you know.
Is she actually dating the guy, or is this she wants the guy and damn any other woman that gets between them?
Now, I believe she's telling her lover that you don't have to flirt with other ladies to prove that, you know, you're hot.
Right.
You know, and now that you've been like chatting up that lady, you tell her you belong to me, mister.
I see. Okay, so this is you will identify yourself as taken, and and you will identify me as your rightful owner.
You are my property. It says so in that tattoo right on your ankle.
See, so this is, I think maybe this is how you and I interpret songs differently, because to me it almost sounds like a sort of a play Misty for me sort of a thing, where she's not really with the guy, but she knows that, like, she's way better for him than, like, the tramps and trollops that he's with. So you ought to tell that girl you belong to me, even though this is what the woman who breaks into David Letterman's kitchen is sort of singing, you know, as she drives there. It's a creepy-sounding song.
Yeah, it is.
It's got that sort of next week on Starsky and Hutch. Starsky's caught a dilly game of cat and mouse.
And there's that mid-70s saxophone.
Carly Simon is a Quinn Martin production. These are the top five creepiest love songs of all time, according to Dawn Taylor. Number three.
Number three is Clay Aiken, Invisible.
I absolutely don't know this.
Oh, listen to the lyrics. From the get-go, right out of the gate, this is a creepy song.
What you doing tonight? Oh. I wish I could be a fly on your wall. Are you really alone? Who's stealing your dreams?
Go.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
That's awesome.
That's from.
Okay, that's completely creepy. And then he doesn't even really mask it with anything. It's, if I was invisible, I could hide inside your room or whatever. Watch you.
I could watch you in your
room. Watch you in your room. Was this a thing where he was trying to be, like, maybe edgy? Or did they not think the song was creepy, but his innate ick factor just sort of, it can't be held in. His sense of oog just sort of permeates the song. Because now I'm just picturing Clay Aiken inside my room while I sleep.
See, now, yeah.
But, like, sort of in a Cheshire Cat way, you know? Where, like, I just
curly hair and a big smile. Yeah.
Over against my armoire.
Good night, Rick. I'm just going to spoon you for a little while.
Yeah, Ike Turner says this is a bit much.
Honey, it's the strangest thing. Were you licking my toes last night?
No.
Somebody was here in the room.
Oh, no, that was just Clay Aiken. Go back to sleep.
Okay.
They said that Clay Aiken's been in this house for years.
All right, Jesus, God. These are the top five creepiest love songs of all time. Dawn Taylor, what's number two?
Number two is Lionel Richie, Hello.
Oh, yes.
All right, see, yes. I haven't heard this song for years, so I don't even know what's creepy about this song.
It's double creepy because you can't help listening to it without imagining the video where he's stalking a blind girl.
Really?
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen the video, or I don't remember the video anyway. He's stalking a blind girl?
Yes, the perfect crime.
I don't even think that counts as stalking. That's just following. That's just standing in the vicinity of.
I sometimes see you pass outside my door.
Pass out outside my door?
Hello?
Who said that? I can't see you. Clay Aiken, get out of my room!
I can see your eyes.
Your blind, dead eyes.
Like a doll's eyes.
You're all I've ever wanted.
arms are open wide. Cause you know just what to say. And you know just what to do.
I love your dog and cane.
And I want to tell you so much. I love you.
It's this sort of hushed, whispered, sort of forcing the air out of his lungs way that he... is the deal that he's in his house and he's just watching her walk by every day? Is he like a shut-in or something and he's just seeing her outside his window?
I guess.
Well, he was in the video, he's a sculptor or he's an art, like...
Art teacher,
yeah. And she's one of his students. And so she's like sculpting various... And at the end, she makes
but
a sculpture.
But she's blind.
Yeah.
But she's sculpting and she's blind. And at the end, she has made this giant clay bust of Lionel Richie.
Wow. Someone in the song has an overdeveloped sense of his own self-importance.
Cause I wonder where you are.
She probably does too. Too soon? Sorry.
You are a bad person. You're awesome. Oh, good God. All right. Let's end this. We are now the number one creepiest love song of all time
I'm kind of scared.
I know exactly what this is. That I knew this one. This is because Dawn, God bless her, recently gave me. Was it for a special?
Was it for your birthday?
Was it my birthday? Don't read anything into that. I love my wife. She gave me the number one song. She gave me a copy of the number one song on 45.
Wow.
Which
an original 45 of
which
this song.
I appreciate in numerous ways. What is it, Dawn Taylor?
It's the Crystals. He hit me and it felt like a kiss.
Written, by the way, by...
Oh, who? I can't remember.
By Carly Simon.
Really?
Carole King.
Carole King.
And it felt like a kiss.
I feel like Conan should be sneaking around the palace to this music.
But it didn't hurt me. He couldn't stand to hear me say.
Ballad of Ike Turner.
It's hard to imagine what Phil Spector would have seen in this song.
I need more cowbell.
So Carole King, who wrote this with her boyfriend and husband, Jerry Goffin, this was actually based on a conversation she had with someone. She was at the kind of Brill Building, wherever they were, wherever they wrote, and she was talking to... She found a girl, like, crying on the fire escape or something. And she struck up a conversation with some girl, like, from the neighborhood. And, like, the girl told her exactly this. And, you know, and she's like, well, my boyfriend, you know, hit me or whatever. And Carole King says, okay, well, you know. And it goes, but that's not the worst part. It felt like a kiss. And Carole King even said, will you excuse me for just a moment? I have to go write something down at the piano.
This is one of those things, even in the early 60s, it's hard for me to imagine that anyone thought this was okay.
No, I can't imagine that there's... I mean, it's wrong. Sometimes you say, like, well, you could never get away with this now. I can't imagine you could really get away with this song then.
Well, domestic violence was more of a handshake back then.
And, of course, it's a Phil Spector production, so it's got that production that sound like it's hitting you in the face with every chord, too, where it's like... This big, like, plodding, punching production.
It's a very punchy song. It's all about punching. It's just punchity punch, punch.
Well, his records always sound so angry. They're always just so loud and intense. Jesus God. All right.
I need a rape shower.
Well, as we end this program, we need to cheer ourselves up with something, I think.
We've got
yes!
All right. Big Jim Willig, you will have to come back and spend some time with us again, my friend.
I would absolutely love to.
It's fantastic. You can find out more about Big Jim. You can follow him at Facebook. Facebook.com/Jim Willig, JIMWILLIG. And we'll put up a link to that at rickemerson.com as well. And this is all true. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, sir. We're going to get out of here because... Just Sarah Greger got to get in for unemployment for Fun Employment Radio here. So that'll be coming up next. Fun Employment Radio can be heard at funemploymentradio.com. So we will now take our leave of you. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Aguilar, chief of staff Cheryl Kenneco, with the Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Friday, August 13th, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you Monday. Bye now. Yeah. We gotta stop it.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.